This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. In the week when Bristol City and Reading dropped their first points of the season, Nottingham Forest, MK Dons and Oldham Athletic all got their first wins. And for the second time in a month, league football's current top scorers, Cambridge United, smashed five away from home. But of course, COVID continues to ravage the country and football. Ipswich Town and Forest Green Rovers players are the latest to test positive. Rotherham United's Paul Warne becomes the third in the Skybet Championship to have to manage his side virtually from home. And the EFL's biggest name, an angry Wayne Rooney, is forced into missing three games after being exposed to the pandemic by a friend. Chat, insight, the stories behind the headlines. It's the official EFL podcast. It's exactly 1 year to the day as we're recording this week's official EFL podcast since Gary Rowett surprised a few of us by choosing the new Den as the latest stopping point in a managerial career that had previously taken him Burton Albion, Birmingham City, Derby County and Stoke City. Millwall were 5 points off the relegation zone when he arrived. They finished last season 2 points off the playoffs and early indications are they may be on course for an even better finish this time around. I said surprise, Gary. Was that the general reaction that you'd taken the Millwall job?
I don't necessarily think so. I think it was because of because I'd managed. I think it's like anything. If you've managed in a championship, then people perhaps think that you're going to wait for what is perceived to maybe be a bigger job. But it wasn't really my remit. You know, my remit after Stoke was to really, you know, because I'd had 9 months out, was to go into somewhere where I just felt as though there was a really good base to give our ideas a chance, to go somewhere where the team and the club really kind of knew what they were, and had a really strong identity. And it needed to be a good fit for me. And it wasn't really about, you know, the size. Obviously, Millwall's a big club, but it wasn't really about the size of the challenge or the club or the quality of the team or anything like that. It was more about some of those things that I mentioned. So when the job came up straight away, I was really interested. And it was ironic that Neil actually recommended me for the job, you know, which I think is a testament to his character and what the club means to him. And probably two interviews later, the rest was history, but it just felt right. It just felt the right thing to do. It felt the right club for me. I would be lying if I wasn't attracted by the thought of working in London as well, because it's something that I've become close to doing a few times. And I thought, you know, if you're going to go somewhere, then why not go to a wonderful city like London? But the club's been brilliant. I have to say 12 months has absolutely flown by, Clem, and I've enjoyed going into work probably every single day. I can't remember a day where I've woke up and thought, oh, a bit dark this morning, don't fancy going in. You know, every day I look forward to getting into work because the people, you know, bring the club to life.
It's a club with very special characteristics, isn't it? And some people will think of that in terms of the raucousness of the Den on match day and some of the salty language and things like that. But it really does have a very special characteristic that underpins it.
Yeah, it's got a real unique feel to the place. I mean, you know, in terms of facilities, there's clubs that I've been at have, you know, far better facilities, far more extensive facilities at the training ground and the ground. But what I would say, sometimes when you're at those clubs, people think about what they haven't got rather than what they have got. Whereas Millwall just know what they've got. And that's, there's no complaints from anyone. The players just get on with it. And they actually almost enjoy that kind of underdog mentality that, you know, it's us against everyone else. And I think that the players have taken to what the club's about, you know, because like you say, the clubs are, it's a fabulous club. It's a working class club. It's a really gritty mentality about it. But it knows that and it's proud of that. And I think when you walk into somewhere like that, you haven't got to try and be something that you maybe not. And that's what I've enjoyed so much. I've enjoyed that relationship with the fans, particularly early on, of course, until they're not there anymore. And maybe when they're not there as well, you realise how important they are. You know, there's 25,000 fans at some places. There's probably 15,000 at ours, and they make more noise than anywhere I've ever been. So So, yeah, I've really enjoyed it so far.
Before the fans, you know, did have to stay at home, did you let the missus come down? Did she bring the kids as well? Did you give them earplugs and do some translation of the words she was supposed to put her hands over the ears of the kids with?
Clem, listen, they've heard 20,000 Stoke fans booing me when I was the manager of their team. Yeah, no, they're well used to it, and they have been down a few times, and they've loved the games, they've loved the atmosphere, and again, you know, symptomatic of this club that everybody's made them feel incredibly welcome the moment they walked into the ground, and I think that's what it is. It's a club that you know, that tries to do things the right way, and I have to say all the games have been enjoyable, even the games we've lost. You know, the atmosphere's been incredible, and you know, you can't help but enjoy that sort of Tuesday night under the lights, you know, with that type of atmosphere at the Den.
You alluded to the tough times. I mean, I've always seen you as a very affable guy. If you have seen your bottom, I've never been able to tell. But how did you get yourself through some of those more challenging periods of your career?
Pretty easy. I'm always been a very sort of balanced in terms of what the job's about. You know, I know that there's times, you know, I've had a lot of good times, you know, I had a lot of early success at Burton, Birmingham, depends on how you define that success. Derby, in my opinion, getting into the playoffs, you know, and then going to Stoke. And that was probably the first time I faced that challenge. But, you know, even that challenge, I think we were 3 points off the playoffs, 2 games before we were sacked. And I just felt it was the expectation at Stoke that maybe, you know, we knew we had to get promotion and we couldn't quite match that. But I think it's times like that that make you stronger, and you have to learn, you know, when you're getting, like I said before, and I'm not blaming them, but when you're getting, you know, stick off all your home crowd after about 5 minutes into a game, it toughens you up and it makes you realise that it is just what it is. And yet, you know, in some ways, I'd walk to the touchline and stick my chest out and think to myself, you know, I've got to try and be proud and still do what I do, you know, because I don't think you can shrink back onto the bench and worry about moments like that. So you then have to reevaluate, and I've always tried to do that. You had 9 months, reevaluate, try and become a better manager, better person. Because don't forget, you know, I've got 4 children, I'm a husband, so it's not just about football. And then really just try to put it into place. But, you know, if you can't cope with the ups and downs of football, then, you know, for me, that's why I'm in it. I like the ups and downs. You know, if it was just up all the time, you know, we'd probably be a little bit, wouldn't feel real. You know, and so it's the extremes that we like. If you gave me a job that was just mundane all week, I probably wouldn't enjoy it at all, you know. So I think we're in it for that reason.
Listen, talking about Skybet Championship games, having won their first 4, Bristol City picked up just a point from their last possible 6 against Barnsley and Middlesbrough. And it's Middlesbrough who also took the first points of the season from Reading before they inflicted a 6 consecutive defeat on pointless Wickham Wanderers. Nottingham Forest picked up their first win and a draw under new manager Chris Hughton, and it's 2 wins in a week for Huddersfield Town, including making it 5 league defeats in 6 for Derby County. And it's also 2 wins in a week for Gary's Millwall, and one of them was against Wickham Wanderers. And I know Gareth Ainsworth is you were briefly together, weren't you, at Cambridge during your playing careers. I mean, how is a manager in that situation where poor old Gareth is still waiting for any sort of points on the board? How was he after the match? I know he's had another defeat subsequently.
Yeah, it was fine. I think that, you know, it's so difficult, isn't it? You have to, it's why I said earlier, you've got to define success. You know, if you quantify, you know, Wickham last season, you know, and it's a sad irony of football, isn't it? But you get a team up, you know, beyond all the odds, and you get a team up, but you shouldn't really get up, you know, if you do the maths and you look at their budget and you look at that division, but they come into a bigger division and it's always going to be difficult because, you know, you're probably paying a third of what most other teams are and a lot less than that. So it's going to take them a little bit of time. They were certainly very, very difficult to play against for us, which you'd expect. Anyone who saw Gareth play as a player, you know, who's probably one of the toughest wingers that I've seen in my time. And you know, his team certainly have that same work ethos. They just need something to drop. You know, they could have easily beaten us. That might have sparked them off. And I think what you find when you're down there, when you haven't got players, individual players to turn games on their own, you know, you need a little bit of fortune. You need a little bit of something to turn to get your form going. So I think they probably know it's going to be quite a difficult season for them anyway. But, you know, what is success for them this year? If they were to stay in the division, a bit like Burton, which I know all about when they were in there, that is an that's like winning the league. You know, that is an unbelievable chance. So you know, they've got to accept where they are, and I'm sure they do. You know, and they will get results because, like I said, they worked incredibly hard and they've got some really good players.
Amongst the fixtures coming up this weekend, Swansea make the trip along the M4 corridor to Bristol City. Neil Warnock's Middlesbrough. Neil returns to Cardiff. Reading at home to Rotherham. Three games I wanted to get a quick response about. I mean, Forest against Derby, the East Midlands Derby, the Friday night game. I remember getting you and Mark Warburton together on opposing sides in a hotel before this fixture, and it was lovely watching you because you're trying to be cordial to each other but didn't want to appear to be too cordial because we had TV cameras poking upon you. It's a real fine line, isn't it? These games mean so much to the fans.
Yeah, in the quest for a fantastic show for you, Clem, you put us in a horrible position.
I did, yeah. I did sit between you.
Yeah, you did, yeah. No, because it's a great because look, I mean, Mark's a great guy, but it's a hard one because all your fans are watching, thinking, "What are you doing, sat next to the Forest manager? We're just about to play them." So we were trying to maintain that little bit of animosity still show. So no, look, it's a great game. You know, it was ironic, wasn't it? It was both our first games. There's not too many times that would happen. And if I remember rightly, they scored with the last kick of the game to equalise. You know, but I had some good games as Derby manager against Forest. I don't think we were beaten by them. And you know, it would be normally a great atmosphere. So it'd be interesting to see how both teams cope. I expect Forest to be very strong. With Chris going in, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's been around the championship for a while. He knows what it takes to get out the championship. And obviously Derby at this moment in time have really, really struggled early days. They have had some injuries. They have had injuries to key forward players, but they are struggling, I think, with no striker at the moment. So could be a really interesting game.
Watford against Bournemouth is the early kickoff on Saturday. I mean, when you are a relegated Premier League club, what kind of things will be swirling around those teams as they go into a match like this for Vladimir Ivic and for Jason Tindall?
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced it at Stoke, a side that had been in the Premier League
Hence
for 10
my
years.
Question.
Yeah,
Hence
absolutely.
My question.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was just highlighting the insightfulness of your journalistic qualities, Clem. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, certainly for me, you know, I can only judge that scenario because I was inside the club. But, you know, you've got a lot of players who don't want to be there. I think we had something like 10 players that on the first day of the season said, "I don't want to be here. I don't want to play in the championship." So there's a challenge, you know, and adjusting to different type of football. What I would say is I think that, you know, Bournemouth have got quite a few players in their squad that have played in the championship, so they know what it's all about. Watford have been the team that have surprised me so far because I actually felt as though they might be the sort of team that would struggle coming down. They've got a lot of international players, a lot of players that, again, probably wouldn't want to be in the championship, but they seem to have settled really well. And when you look at their squad and you look at some of the players, if some of the players are committed to what they're doing moving forward, then, you know, I see both of those teams coping quite well with the drop into the championship, you know, and I think that's going to make the division a lot harder. If you look at Norwich being the other team as well, again, have only been out of the Premier League for a season. And I think it's probably the first time that three teams have come down, look quite stable and look like they've at least got a chance to bounce back.
And the other game I wanted to pick out was Coventry against Blackburn, because they're managed by two, I think, unsung heroes. Just how much of a challenge is it for Mark Robbins and also for Tony Mowbray to have the level of animosity that both respective sets of fans have shown towards the club's owners, but to keep things quiet and be able to progress on the pitch, to keep the owners on side, but to keep the fans on side at the same time?
Yeah, I think both shows in different ways, different amounts of experience, but both very experienced operators, you know, and like you say, they've kept a real equilibrium about their team's performances and about the way they've managed their situations in the clubs, because they've not been easy. I think ironically both clubs look a little bit more stable, if I can say that, recently than perhaps they have done in the past. But I think Mark, you know, with Coventry, has done fantastically well to get them up last season. You know, they play 5-2-3, very expansive style. You know, they're going to have to obviously temper that a little bit in a different division, but they move the ball really, really well and got some young players, a model of young players, developing them, trying to make them better. Tony's a different route, but nevertheless is impressive. You know, they've been playing 4-2-3-1 most of the time, lots of movement, scored a lot of goals in the opening games, and bear aside that, you know, they can outscore any team and that they can be incredibly dangerous. So, you know, again, just two experienced operators that know what they are. And, you know, certainly in terms of those top positions, I'd expect Blackburn to be up and around it. And you know, I'm sure Tony will be able to navigate some of those difficult moments.
Do you have this level of knowledge on all Championship teams? Literally, in your head, you have a reasonable feel for every other one of the 23 Championship teams and how they operate, who their key people are, what their formations are, what they can switch to if they need to.
I mean, you have to have that type of knowledge. You have to know the teams you're coming up against. We're watching games. You know, I'm not the sort of manager, but I'd rely just on our scouting team to prepare for the next game. You know, I'll watch the games myself as well. So if the game's on TV, I'll watch those because I love football, you know, first and foremost. So I think you have an idea of what the teams do. I think you need to have that knowledge of how the teams play. But I also enjoy studying other teams and seeing how they do it, you know, because you can learn all the time.
Listen, great insights. My final question is, lots of focus on the EFL pyramid in recent weeks. I mean, obviously, you started your playing career at Cambridge. In fact, you were part of the most successful team in the club's history that finished fifth in the second tier. You started your management career at Burton Albion. Just how important were those two clubs in your own development and in contributing towards you sitting here now and us chatting?
Oh, absolutely vital, Clem. I mean, you know, I didn't think I was going to be a footballer till Cambridge knocked and offered me apprenticeship about a month before I actually was due to start. So I was going to college, I wanted to be a footballer, but never really thought I'd get the opportunity. So you know, they put me on the football ladder, if you like, as a player. And then Burton, similarly, as a manager, you know, wouldn't have ever thought I'd got an opportunity. I remember going to an interview at Buxton. Never got the job. I think they were in the Northern Counties League at the time.
Wow, I didn't know this story.
I walked in with my PowerPoint presentation printed off, and as I walked into the room, I just flipped it the other way around and thought, maybe not today. It was one of those kind of old school clubs, and you know, there was a couple of old guys there. I'm sure I'd been there for a long time. So what I'm saying is, you know, sometimes you need someone to give you an opportunity. And certainly both those clubs in their own respective ways did that, you know, and that's why it's such a shame at the moment, isn't it? You know, I do think they need help, and they need help quickly, because what we can't afford is, you know, it's great of a top end, you know, whether we call the Championship and the Premier League, it's great of a top end of football. But at the bottom end, it's so important to their communities. And then the work, you know, you look at someone like Burton, the work they do, you know, with the income that they get, the work Ben does in the community of Burton, and how influential and important that is, you know, you're going to find that that has a massively detrimental effect on any town and any city. So, you know, we need to certainly help those lower league clubs.
A pleasure as always. Keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us, Gary.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
It was recently World Mental Health Day, when those of us who might be suffering with our own mental health are encouraged to reach out and talk. The EFL, of course, has its own partnership with Mind and does a huge amount in this area through the community schemes of its 72 clubs. The former Nottingham Forest, Millwall, Middlesbrough, Stoke City, Fulham, Sheffield Wednesday, Oldham Athletic, Chesterfield and Wales goalkeeper Mark Crossley had a challenging start to 2020 himself, although he's feeling a lot better now and is inspiring others with his own turnaround. And your story, Mark, I guess is one that no matter what you're feeling right now, the same sort of treadmill that takes us into problems can very quickly find solutions and take us out. Is that a fair summary?
I think that's absolutely bang on, Clem. Yeah, for my story, definitely.
Go on, tell us about it. Just take us through your year.
January the 2nd, manager who I've always worked with, John Sheridan, he was relieved of his duties at Chesterfield and I went with him, basically. And it's the first time it had ever happened to me where I'd been relieved of a job in football, having spent 33 years full-time in it. So for me, the norm was go back pre-season, do pre-season, have your holidays. It's a routine that you're in. And I was in that routine. It's the first time I'd ever been pulled out of it. Now, although I was ready for the break from it, for family reasons, I wanted to spend more time with my family and football. The world revolves around you when you're in football, whether it's playing, coaching, anything. But you don't realise how other people suffer in that environment. So I got the sack, basically, along with John, 2nd of January, week after my dad got diagnosed with cancer. Me and my dad are really, really close. And I understand loads of people, C word, it happens in life to loads of people. But I didn't handle it very well. And things were suffering at home. Two young boys, 9-year-old, 3-year-old. And when my wife actually sat me down and said, these kids are not seeing their dad, plus getting the sack, plus the dad with cancer, I just turned into not Mark Crossley. I can't explain why, but I did. And I had to find something. I locked myself in the bedroom for a couple of days. I just didn't want to see anybody, you know. And what I didn't realise is I was suffering from depression. So I seeked help. I went for help and I got help because I definitely needed it because I wasn't me.
I don't want to dwell on the lowest point, but what was not Mark Crossley? Were you acting uncharacteristically? You already said you were hiding away to an extent. Can you, for those that have been lucky enough to never experience depression, can you describe what you went through?
I'd got nothing to get up for normally getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning, leaving for work, getting back at 7 at night. I wasn't focused on the most important things in my life, which is your family. I was just focusing. I'd always focused on football and trying to get to an age to eventually be able to retire. Now, I reached that age, but once I come out of it, I couldn't deal with it. I just couldn't deal with the situation. I couldn't deal with what I was missing, normal routine that I'd been in for the last 33 years. Although I had said to myself that I wanted the break, I couldn't deal with the situation. And I'm a deep thinker. I've always been a guy who's glass half empty rather than half full. Why? I don't know. But I have always been that type of guy. I've always planned ahead. So I've always had a 5-year plan, whether in coaching, where do you want to be, what do you want to do? And when that all of a sudden just goes, and I just turned into not being myself, and it caused so many problems at home that I didn't see and I didn't realise. I'd already lost one marriage and I was nearly going to lose another one. But I didn't see it. I just didn't see it, and I wasn't prepared for that to happen again. So I seeked help. I got help through the Sporting Chance, a PFA, and that helped. But then I discovered walking. Walking was just put on me by a friend, noticing that I wasn't myself, and said, I like to go for long walks. Why don't you come with me? Get a little bit of structure. We'll go on Monday. We'll go on Wednesday. We'll go on Friday. And I did it, fell in love with it, and it sounds silly, supposedly, but walking's changed my life.
Wow. If somebody had said, go for a walk with me previously, how did you view walking, and particularly regular walkers?
No, I wouldn't have done it. Cars on the drive, it's there to get in and drive. Now, I don't think petrol in the car is just an afterthought because I walk, but I like to walk by water and I like to walk at heights. Why? I don't know. It gives me a sense of achievement. It gets the endorphins going. It's brilliant for the mind. And I've come out with a few sayings recently, and it definitely is the best medicine. Well, it has been for me. It's been the best medicine, and I walk now between 30 and 40 miles a week. So that's my structure. That's my targets. But I like to travel to places where, search the internet, where can I go where I know it's going to suit what I like, walking by water, walking at certain heights, and it works for me. And I like to go on my own. I like to go in groups, preferably on my own, because I like to listen to music. I love music. I always have loved music. And it's just made me a much more happier person.
Yeah. Well, we'll be the judge of whether you love music or not, because obviously on your Twitter feed, you do occasionally promote certain musical acts. I mean, each to their own, Norm, let's just say that. I'm teasing you, obviously. What I love about your story is that it's inspired others, that as a result of you going public with this, and you file some lovely videos that are so inspirational and very amusing, if I may say so, others have come along, other former footballers have come out, and then you've started to inspire the general public as well.
Well, I decided to open my Twitter feed to private direct messaging, and the amount of messages that I personally get now are, I can't answer them all, but I try to get back at least a thumbs up to everybody. And the sense of satisfaction that I get now, and I'm not an attention seeker, I can guarantee that, I don't need that. I'm not the type of guy that seeks attention. But I've been called that, but I delete and block. So, but what I like to do, I love it when someone contacts me and said, can you help me? The answer's yes. You know, and then we'll have personal conversations. I'm just speaking to a few Nottingham Forest people now, fans that have struggled with mental health, anxiety, depression, PTSD, whatever it may be. And they say to me that I'm inspiring them. Now, it's the other way around for me. So everyone's a winner. So just because I've been in the public eye through football, which I'm so pleased to have been involved with, it's given me the life that I live today, but it's time to come away from it for me. I know that there's other important things. Whether I go back, don't know. But the people that I'm helping, and with the Walking's brilliant group that we've got, the Watch group, we've come together as a group of ex-players who have been quite open on social media and saying they've struggled with their own mental health. Now, if we can be that inspiring to get people talking about it and help people, then we've achieved something. And that's what we're all about.
Just name check those people who you have been walking with or have joined in and use regularly this brilliant hashtag of walking. Well, of walking's brilliant.
Chris Kirkland, Nigel Jemson, John Parkin, Steve Yowie and Dean Windass. Now, Dean Windass and Chris Kirkland have been quite open on social media. Through the press, they've been quite open of their suffering. So we got together. Can we do this? Yeah. So we do get together. We go for long walks. We do different things and we chat and we open up to each other and we speak about our own problems. And you know what? The relief on their faces and our faces when we speak about it, it's like a family. It really is. And we intend to try and take it to the next level. That's our aim, and that's what gives us our satisfaction of being out of football.
So we use this hashtag Walking's Brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's inspired fundraising on behalf of the NHS. You have planned a trek up Kilimanjaro, although in the current conditions it looks as though that might be a domestic walk in 2021, and then what, maybe something that you'll do in the future. But there are beneficiaries from your experience and from the experience of the other ex-pros as well.
Yeah, we've had to put Kilimanjaro back a year. It was all booked, the deposits were paid, but we can't take the risk. So we've decided, the Walking's Brilliant group, we're going to do coast to coast, taking Adrian's Wall.
Wow.
It's, I think, 83 miles, and we're going to do that over a period of 6 days.
It's an amazing walk. It's awesome. And let me tell you this as well, Mark Crosley. There's a few nice hostelries along the way too.
Well, we'd love you to join us.
I'm here. Which way are you doing it? Are you doing it from the northeast to the northwest or from the northwest to the northeast?
Carlisle to South Shields.
You're doing it that way. Well, I did it the other way. So I'm telling you, I'm coming with you. I'm guaranteeing now I would love to do that walk in reverse. Apart from anything else, the best little pub was at the North East End on the first night. So that would be our last night together. So that would be absolutely perfect before we then follow the Tyne out of South Shields. Absolutely brilliant. Listen, two things I've got to quickly ask you. One, if you don't mind, your thoughts on Nottingham Forest, the awful start to the season, but Chris Hughton is the new man in charge. As a Forest legend, what are your thoughts?
I don't like to see managers keep getting sacked, and Nottingham Forest has been one of them clubs where constant managers are getting sacked. And
do you want the stats, Norm? I'll give you the stats now. Since Cloughy, who you played for, you were there when Brian Clough departed in 1993, Chris Hughton is the 34th person to take charge of Nottingham Forest for at least a game.
Well, there you go. That answers everything. No continuity. There needs to be some continuity. There's going to be ups and downs. Forest, how they missed out on the playoffs last year was horrendous. On the last day, a 6-goal swing, and they lost it. And it's obviously just lingered into this season. That's exactly what's happened. It's just lingered into this season that the belief that they were going to be in the playoffs and missed out on the last day, and they've just not recovered from it. And it's shown in their performances early on this season. So people get frustrated. Chairman get frustrated. Owners get frustrated, fans get frustrated, and ultimately what happens then is the manager usually is relieved of his duties. So, but Chris Hughton, what a manager is, taking Brighton into the Premier League. He's a brilliant manager, and I think Forest have been lucky to recruit him, really.
And finally, I mean, you did allude to this, that when you decided to seek help, you knew who to turn to because you've been involved in the professional game. But I'm guessing now if people are reaching out to you and you're trying to advise them, what do you say to them about where to look for help if they are suffering, Mark, and they're not as fortunate as you were to maybe have the Professional Footballers Association to sort of point them in the right direction?
Yeah, well, obviously, the first port of call is like the Samaritans, isn't there? You can pick up the phone and ring. Don't be ashamed to do it. Or, you get in touch with us through Walking's Brilliant. I mean, we're not professionals at it, but the amount of people that we're actually helping, I think when someone from the public goes to someone that's been in the public eye, they tend to take their advice, probably. Now, all my advice is that what's been good for me is walking, music, and a bit of structure in life, and family comes first. So that's what's worked for me. It's not forced to work for everybody.
I will just remind you all, as I said when I was introducing Mark, the EFL do that, have their association with Mind through various community schemes across the 72 clubs. There may be a point of contact that you could turn to as well. If you are suffering, please, please, please reach out to a family member.
Mind are obviously the biggest help out there, aren't they? So they're massive and renowned for helping millions and millions and millions of people. So, you know, it's a perfect port of call is Mind. Perfect.
Thanks for reminding us. Absolutely brilliant. Listen, whatever happens in the future, wishing you a continued happy life. And we have one hot date for next summer, when I hope it's not raining like it is out of my window as I'm talking to you now. But hey ho, if it is, we'll get wet together.
Love talking to you, mate. Can't wait to see you.
This is the official EFL podcast.
So we've already been over some of the key talking points from the Sky Bet Championship during our chat with Gary Rowett. In Sky Bet League One, it's now 6-7 for Hull City, who go top after Ipswich Town suffered a first defeat at Doncaster Rovers. Consecutive wins for them and for Charlton Athletic. It's 4 in a row now for Peterborough United, their latest at Wigan Athletic, and it was a first 3 points for MK Dons. Coming up this weekend, it's first against fourth. That's Hull against Peterborough, Grant McCann against one of his former teams. We've got third playing second, Lincoln against Ipswich. Oxford United and Swindon have lost their last four, will once again contest the A420 Derby, 35 miles between them. And the two juggernauts, unbeaten Sunderland and Portsmouth, go head to head. In Sky Bet League 2, Cambridge United followed up their 5-0 win at Scunthorpe United by beating Port Vale. Paul Mullen with a hat-trick. It's now 10 goals for him. That's a career season's best after just 7 seven games. A first win as interim manager of Salford City for Paul Scholes and a first defeat of the season for Forest Green Rovers. Cambridge at home to Bolton, Newport visit Bradford and Cheltenham entertain winless Mansfield. So that's it for matters on the pitch, but the debate about whether supporters should be allowed back into grounds continues. A reminder, in light of the current and increasing COVID restrictions across the UK, the government's plan to allow controlled numbers of supporters back into football stadia this month was scrapped. That was despite a number of test events last month being deemed successful and fully compliant with social distancing measures. One such test was watched by a maximum capacity of 1,000 supporters as Shrewsbury Town welcomed Northampton Town to the New Meadow. One of them was Shrewsbury Town's supporter liaison officer, Roger Groves. How did it feel from a personal point of view, Roger, to be back watching football and assimilating the kind of risks that are around all of us?
It felt great, to be honest, because we didn't think it was going to happen, and it came at the very last moment. You know, two or three days beforehand, it was still up in the air as to whether it was actually going to happen. So I was, to use a football term, over the moon that we could actually get back. It went very well. But yeah, it was really pleasing because I didn't think it was going to happen at that point.
And, you know, we're all, as we go about our business, we all decide what we're happy to do, what we aren't, where we might be exposed to the risk of infection, where we are. Was that in your mind as you arrived at the ground, as you went into the sort of the walkways in and took your place? And were you looking over your shoulder with your additional responsibility of supporter liaison officer thinking, are they 2 metres apart? Are they 2 metres apart?
I didn't think about it in that way of being feeling at risk at all, and we, the club, and I'd been fortunate to be involved in a lot of the pre-match preparation, so we understood what needed to be done, and the club made a lot of effort into getting a clear message out there to supporters about how you got to the stadium. Now that might sound sort of silly when you say, well, it's the same stadium we've used for the last 12 years, but we erected another fence, so the stadium was fully enclosed. It sat within 24 acres of land, and we did a soft ticket check. There was guidance that had gone out on the club website days before and been repeated in terms of how to get to the stadium, what coaches were running, what transport was available, where the soft ticket checks were, the fact that you wouldn't get past that soft ticket check. So it was all controlled at many points, and every supporter obviously knew where they were going to sit. There was more stewards available to guide them to where they needed to be seated. So I think it was controlled all the way through. So I don't think there was really, supporters were in fear. And one of the questions we asked them, and you know, we had some visitors from the EFL and the Sports Safety Advisory Group there, was, you know, how safe do you feel here today? You know, it's a big question to ask, but you need to know the answer, don't you? You know, you want to understand what it is, and I think you've got to embrace it and go forward. And, you know, we can do the comparisons with what does it feel like going into the supermarket and that. And actually, you know, and I'm not just saying this, I did feel less nervous of it than perhaps going into a supermarket or other venues.
Why?
Because I think the awareness, and again, it was all about the fact that people were coming for a definitive purpose. We knew who was coming. We knew where they were going to sit. They knew exactly what the message was and what they needed to do. And I think, you know, the success that it was made by the supporters. That was the thing for it. Nobody flouted with the guidance or the rules that were there, certainly not as we were aware of or had any feedback from supporters. So I think it was very much, you know, supporter-led.
I don't want to turn this into bash the arts, but there was an event at the Palladium, a Q&A session, a question and answer session with Arsene Wenger, and a lot of people have seen the photograph and said of that night and said, well, wait a second, indoor venue, there looks to be a lot of people in there, albeit socially distanced. Surely football stadiums should be opened up using the same parameters. They're outdoors, for goodness sake. I mean, this one is really sort of, as I say, without bashing the arts, this is really sort of rankled a lot of football fans.
It has, and I don't want to get on any political soapbox or anything like that, but it's a confusing message, I think. You're absolutely right. I like to have a lot of sympathy for other areas. You know, the arts have suffered, like everybody else has suffered, I get that. But, you know, they're trying to find a way to make that happen. But if I just purely put a blinkered football hat on it, I don't understand it. And it doesn't feel fair. It doesn't feel right. And it's a confusing message, I think.
Do you think football is in any way pushing too hard? Because we all know about the circumstances that a lot of our, particularly Leagues 1 and 2 clubs, find themselves in. The lack of income streams, the residual income streams going to all those periphery businesses that provide match day support. Is there any chance that we're looking at this through two starry eyes?
I think the obvious answer for me is going to be no. And I really don't think we are. I think you've got to push hard, but you've got to be fair, you've got to be open, and you've got to be honest with what you say. And if you don't get the right answer to it, then you've got to go and try and find another route to get where you want to get to. So I don't think they are pushing hard. I think, obviously, within football, you've got all the different, you know, pyramids, the different leagues, and I guess there are perhaps key things sometimes that matter more to Premiership clubs and Championship clubs and League One clubs. It's difficult, and you know the end result is we all want every club to survive, no matter who you support. You know, so I don't think we are pushing hard now.
How do you reconcile the current situation, which is half to a third of the country is into severe levels of regional lockdowns? That's one set of messaging coming from central government, and we can all see it in the news reports day in, day out, with the push to get big groups of football supporters back together in clusters at grounds.
Again, I can only talk about what we did at Shrewsbury and our small trial, or the 1,000 pilot that we did, that it was, the hard work was done beforehand to get everything set up in the right way. And that's what I'd like to see every club do, is make sure, you know, that there will be guidance and is guidance from the EFL. And I think they've got to look at each club then, have got to look at their own, work out what they need to do, and make sure that they do everything right. And the minute you cut a corner, the minute you probably put your safety at risk, you put the reputation of the club at risk, don't you? And you put the chance of other clubs making this work at risk, really. So I think we've all got to work together, but there are going to be little things that each club individually need to do differently to make that work.
If I sent you in as part of a delegation to government to make the case for football right here, right now, in the week leading up to the 24th of October, as we record this, what would your central statement to them be?
Well, obviously, we were one of the seven clubs that did the trial. And I think that whilst, you know, I've said that was a success, the fact that we've done it has also brought in things that perhaps we needed to look at differently and tweak slightly. Overall, it was a success. So I'd like to see every club probably go through that pilot trial and then move to the next stage, which would be, let's say, 25 to 30% of clubs getting 25 to 30% supporters going back into stadiums. But again, it's got to be underpinned by having the right setup at the clubs. You know, and I can only speak for Shrewsbury and what we've got there. And we believe that we can get 30% of our supporters in safely to games, watch the game safely, adhere to the guidelines that and the regulations that we have in place, and get people away from the stadium as well. That's the other important thing as well. And I think that's probably the one thing that maybe there's a question mark against is it's not just inside the stadium, it's getting to and getting from, and you've got to work with the, you know, the local authorities to make that, to make sure that that's right. That's what I'd be saying to them. But I think it's definitely something that could happen, and I'd like to see clubs go through that initial trial and then move to the next level.
Roger, keep up the fight.
All right, thanks ever so much. All the best.
That's it for another week. A huge thank you to Roger Groves, Mark Crossley and Gary Rowd. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and please tell everybody about us on your socials if you want to get in touch. Our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.